Hello, we thumped Rangers yesterday 1-0. Well, anyway, we beat them 1-0. So I decided to get Lackey Moore onto the podcast and on to talk about the game yesterday and have a tiny bit of a preview of the forthcoming game. One thing I did note after I came home and I watched the bit I recorded the BT Sport bit, see if you know the guy who kept whistling. God, it must be murder to sit next to him. Anyway, this is a football fans podcast from the people behind CelticUnderground.net. So after the victory against Rangers yesterday, I decided to dial up Lackey Moore and review the game. We discuss the key points and the key moments in the game. And then have a very brief preview. Don't forget, it is the Celtic FC Foundation Christmas Bucket Collection on Saturday against Hibs. Still looking for volunteers, so if you want to go on the Celtic FC Foundation website, you can volunteer to help win the game. Anyway, this is me, Harry Brady, with him, Lackey Moore. So, after the tumultuous events of Sunday, I thought I would join, phone up Lackey Moore to discuss the game. So, Lackey, how are you this evening?
Very well.
Did you enjoy the game on Sunday?
No, I didn't watch it on Sunday. I watched it today.
What were you doing on Sunday that was more important?
Well, as you know, I can't watch. Well, I hate games against them anyway. If it had been up to me, we'd never have played them again. But I went to the driving range. I was the only person there, beating golf balls for an hour. And then I came back, it was half time. So I pottered around down here on the computer and practiced a ukulele and things. And then.
That's right, our famous ukulele playing.
Yeah, Irene came in to tell me they were winning. So that was good because she was watching Anthony's feed from Bratislava. He turns his computer towards his telly and she was watching it.
Right, okay. You probably, Jane, just admitted to breaking the law or something like that, but that's fine.
She was just talking to her son.
Who happens to have the TV on in the background.
Oh, he has Celtic Television because he pays for it. So that was okay. But anyway, I watched it today. I watched the highlights last night and then when it was on Celtic TV today, when I got back from the golf, I watched it right through. And I was surprised to find out that Rangers hadn't been totally rampant and that Celtic weren't totally mince. And that most of the great adventures of Morelos were caused by defensive mistakes and not by brilliant play. Well, that was how I saw it.
I will. Thanks for that. That's the podcast over. Well done. Cheers. We've summarised the game in 2 minutes. No, I will take you through because I got a few opinions on some of the things that have been said at the time and the way it was reported afterwards. So first up, the team. Obviously, we'd had and have got some injuries. So, what did you make of the team when you knew the team?
I was a wee bit surprised. I was intrigued that they played Elanusi because he hasn't played for weeks, and he hasn't played against them before. Now I know Frimpong hadn't played against them before, but he had played in recent weeks and he was in good form. But I thought bringing Elanusi back was a wee bit of a gamble, and I think it proved to be one because he really was poor.
I wondered if it was to do with height, and
yes,
you know, we had two very short fullbacks, and you know that one of the things with Lennon's teams for big games, you know, for the big games so far, he's tried to go with El Hamid, Ayer, Julian, Fraser Foster. Edwards about 6 foot, Elianusi's about 6 foot. So I wondered if it was his concerns about the number of smaller people in the team that's why he got in.
I saw an opinion expressed before the game that he might play El Yunusi up the middle. And I thought there was some logic to that because of the lack of height in terms of Lewis Morgan. And I thought the night they played against Rennes, they played to Lewis Morgan's strengths and they gave him decent balls to chase into the channels. But from what I saw watching the game, all they were doing was lumping it up to him. And he had very little chance of making progress because he was much smaller than the two centre-backs. Whereas the idea that Elneny Nussi might play up front as the target made some sense to me. But they didn't play him like that, and he was really quite ineffectual.
Yeah, well, I think, to be fair to Rangers, the reason why we were hitting it long is because they were playing a very high press, so we couldn't pass it out from the back. So basically, they had their front three and our back four, which prevents us passing it straight out from the back, and then their midfield were on top of our couple of midfielders, which necessitates then hitting it long.
Well, that's why I thought it would have made more sense to play Elneny Nussi up the middle, because he was tall. But he seemed to be, well, he was on the left wing, and he was really on the edge of the game at best.
Well, so we'll go through the teams. So the teams: Fraser, Foster, Frimpong, Julian, and Aya, with Johnny Hayes, who's our third choice left back, playing at left back. We had Callum McGregor and Scott Brown and Ryan Christie in the middle, and then, as you say, Elneny Nussi on the left, Forrest on the right, and Morgan on the left. So, was there anything else that surprised you about that formation, that system, those players?
It didn't surprise me. I saw the team last night, but it didn't surprise me at all. But I thought that they did a kind of number in the midfield in terms of, that's the poorest I've seen Christie play, because he really had no time to play. And they were very, very physical in the midfield. I thought McGregor too was kind of marginalised in a way that I hadn't seen before. He didn't seem to have an out ball at any time, other than Frimpong, who was very often the out ball and did very well, I thought. I thought that part of the reason for their apparent dominance in the midfield was that Frimpong was being shepherded by Scott Brown rather than Brownie being in the middle of the midfield. Do you know what I mean?
Did you think so? I actually just thought, I mean, there's a couple of times I turned to my brother and said, if we want to get more into this game, I think we should just play the ball out to Frimpong.
Yeah, of course.
Because they were doubling up on Frimpong and fouling Frimpong.
Yes, I agree with that. And I will not be critical of the fact that Frimpong was there. But I felt that Brown was kind of riding shotgun for him in case he would be exposed after going up the field, which kind of brought him out of the engine room where they were doing all their physical stuff. That was just the way I saw it when I watched it again. I thought later on, when we went to 10 men, Brown was terrific in the midfield. But I thought he was good throughout the game.
Well, I'll get on to the 10 men.
They were going on about only Frimpong and Foster. I saw people tweeting that there was only two turned up. I actually thought Brown played quite well.
Well, I thought Brown played well once we went to 10 men.
I thought it was more obvious when we went to 10 men, but I thought he did a lot of good covering work for other people.
Do you appear when people are tweeting that, they're actually just tweeting what the manager said?
Do you think so?
Well, that's what Neil Lennon did say. Neil Lennon said, in the first half, only Frimpong and maybe Christopher Ayer and, of course, Fraser Foster.
Well, see, I thought Christopher Ayer, actually, for all I thought, his overall play was good. This thing that we've discussed before about him going to ground caused trouble more than once.
Well, definitely caused trouble. So, it definitely caused trouble for one of Morelos' chances.
Yes.
So, first half, yes, I agree with you. They weren't as dominant as some people were making out, but they were the better team. Do you not agree?
I think they played well, but I thought a lot of their chances came from Celtic mistakes. Now, maybe they forced the mistakes, very often I thought that was an unforced error. Like the one with the one that Morelos missed, having beaten Aja. Aja had caused that.
He did by diving in. I mean, I was the first was thing not, I shouted when he dived in was stop diving in.
Stay on your feet, you know.
Yeah.
And also thought some of Julian's clearing headers were quite poor. He got to the ball quite often and headed it straight out to a Rangers man. Whereas in the previous games, some you know, the one at Ibrox, mm-hmm. I thought he was imperious in the air. But in extra time, I thought he, sorry, when they went to 10 men, I thought he was very good in the air. But earlier on, I thought a lot of his headers went to Rangers players.
I thought in the first half, there was quite a few occasions where when we were passing the ball around the back, it was his slack pass.
Yes.
Then there was a couple. There was one time he passed about 10 yards behind Frimpong, and the ball went straight out.
Yeah.
For a throw in, and it was his passes, his poor passes were the problem.
That's what I mean when I was saying when I was watching it through today and not worried about the score because I knew the score. I thought that a lot of the drama that was created from Rangers was actually created by poor play by Celtic players, which wasn't always forced. You know, I know about the high press and all that stuff, but very often we just passed the ball to them.
Yep.
Or passed it out of play.
So, there wasn't really much from Celtic in an attacking sense in the first half.
There were one or two nice movements, if you watch it again. They had some really nice moves. The final ball was poor. But they had some nice movements, particularly up the left wing, where Hayes had a couple of chances to put good balls in. But, I mean, the way I listened to it, after the game, listening to it on the radio, I thought they were overwhelmed. That wasn't the case at all.
So I know this is a Celtic podcast, but, of course, you're bombarded all the time about what a brilliant, fantastic, unbelievable, incredible player Morelos is.
Yeah.
And I have long said that I thought Morelos is our Lee Griffiths, in that when Lee Griffiths is fit, he can score goals, but there's just something, and I know you really like Griffiths, so there's just something missing that is the difference between him being a player that a team at the top half of the English Championship, bottom half of the English Premiership would go for, and a player that will go for 40, 50 million pounds like Edward. It's just something missing.
Oh, he's not an Edward.
No, he's not. And I saw that yesterday. There was three occasions where we would have gone behind if he wasn't a greedy so-and-so and passed it, and actually just passed the ball.
Uh-huh. Yes.
There was yeah. the one with Aja was one, when he skinned yeah. Aja was one of them. But there was definitely two where if he just cut the ball back, there was two Rangers players waiting for it.
I think it was Arthur was screaming at him because he didn't cut the ball back because he was on his own. But I agree with you. He is a greedy player.
And for me, that just demonstrated, it's like one of my criticisms of, one of the, not criticisms, but one of the things about, for me, if Griffiths comes on as a sub in a game,
aye.
Part of the problem is, he'll be desperate to score. So every time he's got a chance, he'll shoot.
Uh-huh.
Because he's trying too hard. You know, he's still of that mindset of, I'm a striker, so I must score goals. As opposed to, do you know what? See, if we score 4-0 and you've had four assists, that's as good as if you've scored two at one goal. And there's a bit of me can see that with Morelos yesterday. Where he just kept shooting when he was in a position that he should have passed.
I think that's true when Griffiths comes on as a sub or if he's been out of the team and he's trying to prove himself. But I think when he has a run in the team, he can contribute, he can make goals as well.
Yeah, so anyway, as I say, we're not a Rangers podcast, it was just... I never watch them, so this is one of the few occasions when I can get an opportunity to see what everybody's talking about with Morelos, and I can clearly see why he's... If Edward's a Champions League player, Morelos is a Championship player.
Yeah. Aye. He's also a nasty piece of work.
Oh, absolutely. He's a nasty piece of work, which then gets on to some of the stuff in the game. Your comment about the post-match comments about how Rangers bossed the game, and obviously we'll get on to some refereeing decisions as well. But there was a bit. There'd been a three or four balls up that Morelos had fouled the Celtic player, uh-huh. and it had gone unnoticed by Willie Collum, and then he jumped into, I think it was Christopher Ayer leading with his elbow.
Yes,
and we got the foul.
Aye,
and Collum gestured to Morelos that he'd gone up with his elbow, and I thought, well, if you think he's gone with his elbow and you're given a free kick, surely it's a booking.
Yeah. I thought he got away with murder yesterday. I saw people had said that. But watching it again today, I thought, where's this? Where's the referee going to take action against this guy? He booked other guys for less.
Yeah.
It was almost as if he was afraid to book him because he was picking on the Buffalo, you know? No, the big guy's a thug.
You know, before the game, so my brother works with someone who's the dad of a player in the top flight of Scottish football, who'd said that Morelos is by far the dirtiest player in the league. That he nips, stamps on your foot,
uh-huh.
rakes his foot, you know, at corner kicks, he rakes his foot down your shin, stamps on you, goes up for a challenge, puts his knee into your back, his elbows are everywhere and they're nipping. And he's just a really, really nasty piece of work. And that's why sometimes you'll then see a defender really flying into him in a challenge. Mm-hmm. It's because of the way he plays. And again, this was before the game. My brother was saying that this guy then said to him, everybody's talking that Morelos has changed this season. He's not changed. For some reason, the referees have stopped booking him.
Yes. I thought that watching him yesterday. I thought he got away with murder yesterday. And, I think it was one guy get booked for his first really bad foul. And then you're saying, when's he going to book him? Because some of the things he did were quite dangerous. That nip he had at Julian's hamstrings, really, at the back of his ankle,
mm-hmm.
that could have done serious damage.
Yeah. So first half, the sort of main things in the first half were they had a few chances. I think was it Ryan Jack who had that shot with the Fraser Foster save?
Big shot, yeah.
So what do you make of Big Fraser Foster's performance in the first half alone?
I thought his saves were absolutely crucial, but I thought some of them were quite bizarre. He was just sticking his foot out. And some of the misses were quite bizarre as well. He was doing his job. You know, I'm a great fan of Bill Belichick of the Patriots and this thing about do your job. Well, he certainly did his job yesterday. But I just thought some of them looked quite just reaction saves. Although the one that you're talking about, Jack's shot, was a magnificent save.
The thing that really, really impresses me about Fraser Foster with these saves is how strong his wrists are.
Appears to be, mm-hmm. yeah.
Because it's not just... The thing about the strength of wrist is it holds... You know, if you think about it, the ball's coming at, you know, sometimes when they measure these shots, it's 80, 90 miles an hour. It's flying at you.
Yeah.
For his hand to be able to... For the ball to move away at the pace that it then moves away, that means his hand has to be rigid in a straight line with his arm. Which means, you know, the flexible part of your arm and hand is your wrist. So the strength in his wrist to keep that rigid, to push the balls away, is just, it's incredible. So we get to half-time, certainly in the game, I didn't think we were playing well. And my gut feel was we needed to make a change, but again, we were discussing at half-time that Lennon's very different to Brendan Rodgers. He's not an early substitution man. So I was really... The only thing I then noted at half-time was that Mikey Johnson wasn't warming up. All the other subs were out warming up and Mikey Johnson wasn't there, is what I really noted. And then... Well, you obviously knew, but I was... I was quite surprised to see that we, although Elionisi wasn't performing well, I was still surprised that he made the change at halftime. And did you think that made a difference beginning the second half?
I thought they played quite well at the start of the second half. There's some nice moves, particularly up the left. But I thought the weather was a factor in the first half.
So it's interesting you say that, because I was, but the thing about it is, I was commenting at half time that when we looked, when we had the ball, the pitch looked heavier than when they had the ball. We were moving the ball. You know, like when you play golf in the winter, sometimes it's just hard work.
Yeah.
And, you know, even just swinging the club feels like hard work. The ball feels heavy. The grip, you always seem to take more of a divot in the ball. Everything just feels hard work.
Mm-hmm.
I felt that's what it looked like when we had the ball, but it didn't look like that when they had the ball.
And I think that's because the wind was blowing particularly strong from looking at the camera from left to right.
And it's difficult to judge on the ground because it does feel like it's swirling around when you're in Hampden. Would have been
when they do those close-ups and they show you the rain, it seems to be driving into the Celtic end.
Well, you and I have been soaked many a time in the Celtic end. In fact, my brother was reminding me, I'd forgotten this, in the 1982 Cup Final, the Rangers fans complained because our tickets were £1 cheaper than theirs.
Aye.
They had a roof and we didn't. And that was a day like today.
Yeah. I don't know if you saw last night, I tweeted about, I said that yesterday, but it was like payback time for the night that, remember, Robertson got ordered off?
Yeah.
And Celtic absolutely battered them. And McCoy's broke away and scored. And we didn't get a penalty.
Mm-hmm.
And we get soaked through. And it was just like, that was karma yesterday. Yeah, although I thought we actually played better that night than they did yesterday. But that's years ago.
So second half, Mikey Johnson came on, and then not long after, Edward came on. And when Edward came on, we started playing better.
Well, I'll tell you something, I was listening to you. I only got a wee bit of the tonight's sports sound. I'll need to go listen to the podcast. Gary Caldwell was on a couple of other jokers, but one of them said that he had never seen the introduction of any player change a stadium the way that did yesterday. When Odson Edward come on, he indicated the dynamic of the game changed. The mood of the Celtic support went up and Celtic began to play better.
And one of the first things that happened,
was he get fouled?
Was Conor Goldson just tried to kick him? Or didn't try to kick him, just kicked him?
Just kicked him. He should have been ordered off.
Well, at the minimum, it's a yellow card. Absolute minimum, it's a yellow card, because his attitude was patently, you're just on,
aye,
you're a bit injured,
aye,
and I'm going to show you that we're who's in charge here, and I'm also going to just give you a kick in case you can't cope with the... You know, in case you're not fully fit and you're still struggling.
That's right.
How he didn't get booked is beyond me.
Well, how the guy didn't get ordered off for kicking Johnny Hayes? That was a nonsense. You know, the assault on Johnny Hayes out in the wing?
Well, interestingly, I saw that Johnny Hayes got off the team bus at Celtic Park with his foot in plaster.
Yes. And that was a direct consequence of that tackle. I couldn't understand why, you know, when you consider what he ordered Frimpong off for, which technically was the right decision, but it wasn't assaulting anybody, whereas some of their challenges were a disgrace.
So Conor Goldson just runs over and kicks Edward. And then we get the free kick. So this is another one of these controversial things. So left the game, So, you know, before all the celebrations, you saw a bit of the celebrations, then left with my dad so that we were avoiding a bit of the rush, or he was avoiding a bit of the rush, walked along, and then when I left my dad when he was at his car, I drove up, walked up, put the radio on, walking up, and all I'm listening to is about the fact that the Celtic's goal had three players about a yard offside.
At least three players, according to the BBC.
Yeah, a yard offside. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, wow, I didn't really think that at the game. You know, and I was down in that corner, maybe a wee bit further round, but I really didn't think it at the game. And I come home and reading all the media talking about, you know, I mean, to be fair, they were sort of saying the type of thing, and we'll get onto this as well, sort of saying the type of thing we used to hear in the 90s of, yeah, but after that goal, you played a third of the game with Rangers played a third of the game against 10 men and got a penalty and they still couldn't get anything out of it. So come on, right? So they were being a bit fair on that side, but they're going on about it being about a yard offside. Then I come home and I watch it and I'm thinking, no, what about the Rangers number five?
Yeah.
And then only because I've read so much about it, I then go and I created a wee video. You can go online and you can see the sort of highlights and some of the footage I took from the game as well, put it all together. So I then looked at that, paused it, and I know this sounds like sad man stuff, but it's only because you're so fed up with it. I then paused it and zoomed in, drew a line between the Rangers player's shoulder and Julian's shoulder, because they kept going on about three players were offside. I'm sorry, but the way the offside rule works in modern football, the other two players could have been a mile offside. It's irrelevant. Because unless they interfered with play and got impeded the goalkeeper's view, their position's irrelevant. And I drew a line between the Rangers player's shoulder and Julian's shoulder. And okay, I'm not doing it with the scientific accuracy that VAR does it, but it was pretty much in line. And again, I'm not saying he's definitely onside or he's offside. All I'm saying is, on the radio I'm being told there's three Celtic players at least a yard offside. And I come home and I watch it, and actually, it's debatable whether he's on or off. And they're berating the linesman, saying, how can you miss something so obvious? Well, actually, they all owe the linesman an apology. Because the linesman spotted something that they all missed, which was a Rangers player who was sandwiched between the three Celtic players.
Yeah.
So you've watched it a number of times. You've watched it today. What's your thoughts on it?
Well, I've seen the bits on Twitter as well, where people are actually focusing on that. I mean, Celtic TV, they were prepared to accept the goal whether it was onside or not. But it looks as though I don't know their names, these Rangers defenders, but it looks as though one of their arms is visible.
The only thing is the arm, you can't score with an arm, so that's not counted for offside purposes.
Yeah, what does it need to be? His foot?
His armpit. Top of his shoulder and his armpit. The arms. So your arm could be sticking right out offside, and it's not relevant because you can't score with it.
But it was never glaringly offside the way they described it in the radio yesterday. I mean, last night when I was listening to the BBC after the game, they were just going off their head about it. The only person who seemed to be keeping equilibrium were Willie Miller and Richard Gordon, who I always think were quite happy to see Rangers lose. So they weren't too bothered either way. But to listen to Tom English and people like that, it was as if it was criminally offside and that the referee and the linesman were completely incompetent in that instance. I don't think they were.
No, I think those members of the media owe the linesman an apology for the way that they were berating his poor decision-making, because it's actually what it demonstrates is they weren't paying attention. Because Hollander, just before Celtic take it, there are three players standing the other side of the Rangers line of defenders. Then Hollander steps in. Then he starts to step back out again. Actually, Rangers fans, instead of bemoaning about whether the goal was offside or not, should be slaughtering their defender who steps into players on and then steps back out again to leave Julian to be able to put the ball in the back of the net.
Yeah. There's two things that really annoy me, and the Celtic are very guilty of it, watching games. One is, why do they need to stand in an offside position at all? You know, why do they even take that chance that a defender would make the step back? Why not just stay onside and attack the ball as it comes in?
Because I think the idea behind it is the defence want to create a high line.
Of course
away
they do.
From the goal, and the attackers want to drag them on top of the goalkeeper because that's how more likely to get a mistake. And by standing there, defenders are then tempted to do what Hollander did, which is step in.
But you think of the goals that Billy McNeil used to score from headers and free kicks and things like that. And he never felt the need to stand offside. He attacked the ball at the top of its flight and headed it in. You don't need to start in an offside position. And I think it just invites confusion when you do that. I know the reasoning behind it, but I don't think you need to play that game.
I think it depends in part.
And I said it last week after the Rennes game. The number of times that we got free kicks in Rennes' half and passed it back. And yet, when we played Hamilton last week, they got a free kick, launched it right into the middle, created panic in the Celtic defence. Now, yesterday, we got a free kick in the Rangers' half, crossed it in, we got a goal. The number of times we waste goal-scoring opportunities, because they are opportunities and other teams exploit them, we pass them back very often. So that there's two things about free kicks that annoy me. One is that, and the other is not taking advantage of a free kick in the opponent's half by launching it into the middle.
Yeah, but one of the reasons why modern football doesn't do that is because the stats tell you that you are exceptionally unlikely to score a goal from doing that.
Well, there are some teams, and you know it, especially in the English Premiership, who live and die on dead ball situations.
Yeah, no, but if you watch, right, so how many times do you watch, for example, 90 minutes of a Burnley game?
I know that. Exceedingly boring.
No, what I mean is, you're only ever watching the highlights, so you're only ever seeing, you're seeing the times that they score from one of those set pieces, which might be one in four games, but for all you know, they might have put in 50 of those crosses, so they've scored one in 200 crosses.
I think it'd be a wee bit harsh on them. I think teams like Burnley and that work very hard at getting free kicks and crosses in.
Oh, they do. The point I'm making is,
I think the return's better than you're suggesting.
No, it's not, because I don't have them to hand, but the percentages of scoring direct from a corner kick or a cross ball at that are less than 10. They're less than one in, I think they're about less than one in 40 in the English Premiership in the last 20 years.
You're certainly not going to score if you pass it back to the centre half.
No, but the whole point, the argument is because teams, better teams score more from
open play.
So you're better to just keep the ball in open play rather than play the ball into a box where you've got a 50-50.
And yet, two of the most important goals we've scored in the last few weeks were scored from dead ball situations where they crossed it. Against Lazio and yesterday.
But how many crosses have we put in the Lazio game, in the games and yesterday's game, and in all the games between Lazio and yesterday's game?
Well, I think sometimes you've got to try.
No, my point being, so if we put in 100 cross balls in four games, we scored two goals on them. So the point would be, I'm not saying for or against, I'm just saying why modern teams do it. The argument would be, we've scored 2% of our, we've converted 2% of those cross balls, would be the argument.
I'm not convinced.
Well, I'm just telling you what the stats are, that's all.
I know that. But I still think if you've got big guys in your team, there comes when you get free kicks in and around the other team's box, it's worth putting the ball in. Because you may get a ricochet, you may get the ball knocked down and somebody shoot. It doesn't always need to be a clean header. But it seems to me it's a wasted opportunity.
As I say, I don't have the stats. It's
especially if you're working guys who can cross it.
I think it's the numbers game, the book The Numbers Game, that's done the analysis of how many shots on target there are from a corner kick, how many second ball shots are coming from a corner kick, how many shots there are towards goal, how many shots are on target, how many shots are off target, and it is really, really, really low numbers convert into corner into goals from those types of crosses and corner kicks. So I'm not saying right or wrong, I'm just saying that's why modern teams tend often to not just fling the ball in.
I think the Celtic's case is very often because maybe they do work at it in training, but the quality of the cross is often poor. They never get it past the first defender.
But then the argument, and you know, I asked Stevie Woods when I did the podcast with Stevie Woods and John Kennedy. I remember asking Stevie Woods why goalkeepers come for crosses less and why they catch the ball less. You know, if you remember back in the 70s and 80s when European games were on, you'd be watching Sports Night and they'd be laughing at the foreign goalkeeper because he went and punched it. And the first thing they would say is, oh, he's looking very nervous or he's unsure.
Seth Meyer.
Just because he would punch it instead of catch it. And Stevie Woods was just talking about the type of balls are different now. Mm-hmm. And just teams have become far more adept at dealing with crosses, dealing with corners, for defenders dealing with it, far more adept at putting the ball. Just how much the game has changed in putting crosses in or dealing with cross balls and zonal defending and man marking and part zonal, part man marking. And that's the reason why it's very different the way crosses come in and the way people deal with crosses these days. Anyway, on from Julian, and relatively quickly after they got the penalty. So what do you think about what led to the penalty?
That was just chaos. It was just mental the way they were kicking it off each other. As if they were panicking in the box. I think somebody tried to clear it and it hit off Aher and came to in front of Morelos when the boy pulled him down. But it was just incompetent defending. It wasn't brilliant football by Rangers.
I don't think it was. I thought it was more unlucky defending than incompetent defending.
If you don't clear your lines, it's not very competent.
Yeah, but if you don't clear your lines because you're trying to quickly clear it and it hits someone and bounces back into the field of play, I would say it was more unlucky.
I know what you're saying, but
I think you're being overly harsh by saying incompetent defending.
There was a lack of poise about it. And I thought that was a feature of the defending points throughout the game. A lack of panache. Just get it away. Whereas, you know, when they're at their best and playing well, they're prepared to take a touch, make a pass. They were just hacking it away at times. And that just played into their hands because they kept returning it. But I thought it was poor defending.
So a couple of things on the penalty. First of all, going up to the game, we were discussing, you know, Celtic being a better team, and if we play to our best and they play to their best, we'll win.
Yeah.
But you know, there's humans involved, so mistakes can be made. And my brother said, the one thing I don't want to do, I just don't want it to go to penalties.
Uh-huh.
And I said, well, I'm a bit more confident if it went to penalties because Fraser Foster saves penalties.
He does, he does.
As Fraser Foster saved a penalty.
Uh-huh.
The other thing was somebody, Eddie Pearson sent me a thing last night saying you have to read the follow match thread. It's quite funny, right? So I went on follow and looked at that match thread and I started at the penalty and it sort of summed up all football fans in some ways because the video of the penalty says, penalty, brilliant. We've, you know, there's all these comments. Brilliant, we've got a penalty. That's it, we've got a penalty. This is it. This is where the game changes. We've got a penalty, right? And then the phrase, and then everybody's writing, it's got to be Morelos. It's got to be whatever else they call him. But it's got to be Morelos. Tav's missed the last few penalties. It's got to be Morelos. You know, can it be Tav? It's got to be Morelos. And then it's brilliant. Tav's given the ball to Morelos. Fantastic. Fredo's taking it, whatever his name is. Is it brilliant? It's going to be this. It's going to be that. Then all the expletives, which I won't say because you're on the programme tonight. Then all the expletives come in. Then it's captain bottled it. Big game captain should have taken it. Should have been Tav had taken it. He's a penalty taker.
I know. I went on to the bear pit. There was lots of listening to the comments on that. It was hilarious.
So what's your thoughts on Big Fraser saving the penalty?
Well, he was off his line. Shocking. Last night after the game, among the many complaints of Neil McCann, was that it should have been retaken. VAR would have disallowed a goal. VAR would have disallowed the penalty save. And we were hard done to. If it was VAR, Rangers would have won. I just sat and laughed. But it was comical.
I tell you the thing again, because this is the type of sad thing that football fans do. I watched Fraser Forster and I thought, I don't think he's done. You know, because again, I was listening to it in Radio Scotland on the way home after they talked about the three Celtic players being yards offside. Mm-hmm. They then were talking about, as you say, Fraser Forster being both, I mean, when the penalty was taken, both feet were off the line. You know, he was a good couple of feet off the line. So I watched it and I thought, that's no different to all other penalties. I thought, I was trying to think of a penalty that we'd had against them that they'd saved, you know, the current club or the old club that they'd saved. And then I remembered. Remember the penalty that Samaras missed?
Aye.
So I went and looked at the penalty that McGregor saved against Samaras. Mm. Ibrox in that game. There is no difference between how far McGregor's off his line saving that penalty and how far Fraser Forster's off his line. None at all.
I don't understand this. As long as I think the goalkeeper's staying on his line, once the kick is in process, how is he supposed to save it and stay on his line? Any goalkeeper. Because when you leap, you know, you're going to leave that very thin line.
Mm-hmm.
Are they saying goalkeepers?
It's not like he's charging out.
No, you know, is it not allowed to save a penalty now?
Well, not if you're Fraser Forster, who... So, I don't know how many penalties Craig Gordon's had against him now, right? But last time I checked, it was 35 penalties against in his career, and he'd saved two.
Aye. One in a European Cup game for Celtic.
Aye.
And one against Gretna. Yeah. In the Cup final.
Now, Fraser Forster's had... I saw a thing yesterday. Fraser Forster has faced 35 penalties in his career and he's saved 14.
Yes. And quite a few for Celtic.
Yep. He's saved three penalties this season.
Uh-huh.
I mean, one of them he saved in his NBA scope. He saved three penalties. I mean, I always felt that Brad Douglas was a good... Actually did okay. Like I've said before, I think a huge keeper.
Yeah.
Puts it forward off before he's taking a penalty because suddenly this guy's filling the goals.
To be fair, Craig Gordon is a huge keeper, but he goes the wrong way all the time.
Yeah, but he doesn't make it, he's not as huge as Fraser Forster.
I mean, the body shape.
Just everything. Fraser Forster fills those goals. And I think that makes a player intimidated when he's going to take it. Probably the goals feel tiny. I think you increase the possibility of the guy hitting it past the post because he's trying to get it out of the reach of this huge man mountain.
Uh-huh.
Did you think it was a red card for Frimpong?
He did. I didn't realise. I thought the rule was that, you know, if you gave the penalty, you booked them. But someone pointed out to me that you had to be within playing distance of the ball.
Yeah, they changed the double jeopardy rule so that if you were going for the challenge,
uh-huh.
and fouled him, you didn't get an automatic red. But in Frimpong's position, but you still get a red card if you pull a jersey or you handball it on the line, or you pull a player back from behind.
Yeah, I mean, the boy himself said it was a penalty.
So I nearly missed the penalty at the game in terms of seeing it, because I was watching how gutted Frimpong was. And I was watching him going off. And I was watching that Duff and Kennedy were out of the dugout giving instructions to the team.
Yeah.
And they just, it was as if Frimpong wasn't there.
But Neil Lennon gave him a big hug.
Neil Lennon went to give him a hug, and then I realised the penalty was, I mean, out of the corner of my eye, I saw Morelos moving out, and I looked across just to see Fraser save it. So after that, the next sort of big event in the game was Mikey Johnson's chance.
Oh, what a pass. What a passing, you know.
Yeah.
What a run he made.
Yeah.
I think he slipped.
He did. I mean, it's not as easy to see on the telly because there's a player, there's a Rangers player between Mikey Johnson and the camera.
Yeah.
But at the game, different angle that I was at, he takes a bad touch and then slips.
Yeah. I was listening to a guy tonight, a Celtic supporter, who bottled it. And I thought, he didn't bottle it at all. The boy fell. He slipped.
A guy behind me really bugged me because he said he shat it. He's a shite bag. He shat it.
Crap.
I mean, the guy's got the same view as he is, and the guy who didn't have a white stick and dark glasses on, you know, he's watching what I can see, which is young boy, clean through, didn't shat it.
No.
He just had a bad touch and then slipped as he went to hit it.
Yeah. I must say that once or twice I've seen Christie going through and go, and he hits it very early.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Before the goalkeeper has a chance to even set, he wheeks it past him. He's done that several times. And I thought maybe he just held on to a wee touch too long. But he did slip.
Yeah.
I don't think it was a case of cracking it. He was up for school.
No, and you know, he's a young guy clean through on goal, and you know,
how many times have we seen Lee Griffiths miss chances like that?
Exactly. I mean, the only thing is, it would have completely changed the game if we'd have gone 2-0 up at that point.
The cruise to him. I mean, the last few minutes were a bit frenetic. That daft one that came across the goal of Morelos seemed to get to the end and it rolled right along the goal line.
Aye.
At the other side. You know, and I thought, for goodness sake, this is chaotic.
So the thing I would say about it is, I thought we were excellent with 10 men.
So did I. I don't think it made a big difference, Beto.
I just thought it was fairly obvious that we practiced playing with 10 men.
Well, according to Sports Sound tonight, Stevie Gerrard would have had his team practicing 11 against 10. But they hadn't gone out and carried out his instructions. That's quite good.
I just thought we did that brilliant thing of we just sat in and it was like an arch shape.
Aye.
And you saw it a lot under Brendan Rodgers as well. So you know, I don't know whether it's actually a John Kennedy thing, because I know that Lennon's making a big thing about the amount of input John Kennedy has in our tactics and systems. But it really was just like this sort of dome, protective dome, 30 yards from goal around our box that just shifted from side to side, meaning that they just kept shifting it side to side, and I thought we were brilliant, absolutely brilliant. For 30, over 30, more or less 30 minutes we played with 10 men.
And it played, and that was the best they played in the game. They had more constructive passing movements with the 10 men. And do you know who came into his own at 10 men? Callum McGregor.
I thought Scott Brown became a real captain at 10 men.
But I mean, I've said to you, I thought even at the beginning, I watched it today, and I thought in the first half he played all right. and you're right, when we went to 10 men, he was outstanding. I thought Callum McGregor, who had been fairly neutralised, played very well with 10 men.
But it was, I suppose it was part of, as I say, we just... it's obvious to me that, you know, we practiced going down to 10 men and we knew what to do. And, you know, if you think about it, we were playing with our third-choice left-back who subsequently, after the game, had to get his foot in a stookie.
Uh-huh.
And our fourth-choice right-back, because Christopher Ayer moved out to right-back.
Well, they were talking about that on Sports Sound tonight and suggesting that when Frimpong went off, that they should have made more use of Kent, because he was up against Christopher Ayer, and he should have exploited that. And I'm thinking, Christopher Ayer is a terrific player. What made you think you're going to exploit a Norwegian international who's really at the top of his game, apart from his silly slides into things? What made you think you're going to exploit that? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It made no sense to me that the guy who was talking tonight on Sports Scene should think that the fact that Christopher Ayer had gone to right back and we brought in Nurbitong at centre-half gave Kent open field running, sir. No, that was never going to happen because Christopher Ayer is a very good player. I don't know where the logic of that came from tonight, listening to him.
Oh, that's because they think Kent's some wonder kid guy.
Oh, no. He was actually rotten. He was hopeless.
I tell you the other thing that I thought we were good at as well, running the clock down.
Aye.
Because I'm not quite sure what part of Fraser Foster's leg required treatment, and I'm not sure Fraser Foster knew which part of his leg required treatment.
Do you know, I don't know why, when you're into the last minute of injury time, why stop the game?
To stop them getting any momentum.
But why do they have any more? We had the ball.
Because how many times have you seen us? The most vivid memory I have is you playing away to AC Milan, and it was 1-1 with a minute to go, and we lost the game 3-1, and we had a foul at the edge of our box, and we didn't do that sort of nonsense. I thought it was brilliant that Fraser Foster went down, because the one player who is not made to go off the pitch, who cannot be made to go off the field when he's in treatment, is the goalkeeper.
Right, I didn't know that. That's news to me.
That's why it's Fraser Foster that goes down in the final minute.
Because I listened to Tommy Boyd. He's going, he maybe get cramp. And I'm thinking, why would he have cramp? He hasn't done any running.
No, the reason it's the goalkeeper is because the goalkeeper's is the one player who's not made to go off the park after treatment. So your goalkeeper going down in the final minute just wastes time, because
they don't just add it on.
They never do. They add on a wee bit, but they never add on the full amount of time that he's down. They never do. So if there's a minute to go in Fraser, if we're in the... You know, there's 6 minutes of injury time. If we're in the fifth minute of injury time and Fraser Foster goes down for a minute, they will add on 30 seconds top whack. So you've just wasted 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest reason you know that Fraser Foster was completely making it up is because 1 minute later he ran the length of the field to celebrate with the rest of the Celtic players.
Exactly. Yeah, I saw that.
So, I'm trying to think if there was any other major talking points in the game.
Well, I mean, I was listening tonight, as I said on radio. I'll need to go back and listen to the whole podcast. And some of the stuff that I've talked about, I thought, you know, Rangers did have a great victory yesterday. They played so well. And Celtic was so bad. Then I kept thinking, no, I don't think that was what happened. You know, their analysis after it was... that they were, it was a triumph for the way Rangers play. And I couldn't see it myself.
The thing for me is, I didn't realise this, it was only having a chat with my mate tonight on the phone, I was coming home from work. Apparently this is something that earlier, a couple of months ago, we'd have been complaining about. We play one more league game in December than they do.
So what does that mean?
It means that if we match them for result and win the extra league game that we've got, we go into the 29th of December 5 points ahead of them. If we beat them on the 29th of December, we're 8 points ahead of them.
So why do we play one more game than them?
I have absolutely no idea. It's some. It was, what, if I look at the fixtures, something to do with when we play Hearts away next Wednesday, they don't play that night, they play on Friday the 20th.
All right.
So we then play Aberdeen on Saturday the 21st, and they don't play that weekend. And then Boxing Day, we're away to St Mirren, and then we play them.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, I said to Eileen today that if Celtic matched them point for point to the game the 29th and beat them, then that there's really daylight between them. But it's important that we beat them.
So, yeah, if I look at their fixtures, just looking at it now, they play Sunday at 12 away to Motherwell. We play Sunday at home to Hibs. So there's a possibility, if they win, there's a possibility that they're top of the league for 2 hours on Sunday. Then we play Hearts on Wednesday. They play Hibs on Friday night.
Right.
Away.
Uh-huh.
Then...
easy games. Motherwell's not an easy game.
No. And then... and this is the problem of, they had their fixtures front loaded. After 10 games, I think they played 6 at home and 4 away, and we play 6 away and 4 at home.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, mm-hmm, they'd only played one top 6 team.
Uh-huh.
So they've now got a and so, yep. So that's the way the fixtures go. So they play Hibs on the Friday night. We then play on the Saturday. We then play on the Saturday at home to Aberdeen. Then on Boxing Day, we're away to St Mirren at night. We're away to St Mirren and they're at home to Kilmarnock. And then we play each other on the 29th of December. So, yeah, we'll have played one more league game than them. We play an extra game in December than they do. But it then means if we match them result for result and win...
the extra game.
The extra game at Tynecastle, with Hearts having a new manager, so it might be a bit of a challenge. And we beat them on the 29th, that'd be 8 points clear, and we'd have won the League Cup. So, I mean, if I was Steven Gerrard, I would be trying to make them feel better. I'd be saying to my players, look, you played really well. Their goalkeeper had a fantastic performance. He wouldn't repeat that performance again. Is, you know, that's a one-off. If we play that game another 10 times, we'd win it 10 times. Blah, blah, blah. You know, that's what I'd be saying, to try and get the spirits up. But the reality is, they've lost the League Cup. They're 2 points behind us in the league. Thursday night becomes a huge game for them, whereas on Thursday night, by listening to Neil Lennon today, we're taking all our fringe players on Thursday.
Yes.
I would not be surprised if... well, put it this way. Scott Brown's not going because he's suspended.
Uh-huh.
Julian will probably not go because he's one booking away from a suspension.
Uh-huh. Do they not wipe them out, though, after the league sections?
I'm not sure. I need to check that.
Because when I heard him talking last week about Bruni getting himself booked, I thought, surely they wipe them out. The knockout stages.
I thought he did, but he ran around like he didn't think so.
That's what you said,
I wouldn't be surprised. Eddie's not going. Edward's not going.
No.
And I wouldn't be surprised if Craig Gordon was in goals.
Aye, I would expect that too.
So, you know, they've got a big game that they must win, and we can rest our players.
I was listening tonight, as I said, to the BBC, and I think it might have been Gary Caldwell, but it might be one of the other ones who pointed out that Celtic, on the basis of last night and Neil Lennon, or yesterday, and Neil Lennon's comments and Scott Brown's comments, was that there was no chance of complacency. They weren't going to say, oh, we gubbed him, so we don't need to worry too much about forthcoming games, but we're the better team. They know that they kind of rode their luck a wee bit and they got a result at times against the Head, and they know they'll need to play better. And I thought that was a good point. That in some ways, yesterday was a great result, that they didn't play very well because they'll need to up their game.
Mm-hmm.
And they know that. Although I had to laugh at Jim Spence's comment. Did you see it?
Well,
he said Celtic are boofing. They're still better than Rangers. This was before the game was finished. He'd actually said that. So on Twitter, he said Celtic are boofing, but they're still better than Rangers. That was very good.
Do you know, a couple of things, as I tweeted yesterday, I sent a text, you know, Donna Rubman knows into of my Rangers supporting friend. So I just sent him a text saying, now you know how we felt in the early 90s.
Exactly. How many times did we battle them?
Yeah.
Only for Gorham to keep us out.
So I thought that was a bit of karma. If not, I can vividly remember a game at Celtic Park where we absolutely battered them. I think Stuart Slater hit the bar, and you know, maybe Mike Galloway hit the post or something like that. Virtually the whole game we spent 30 yards from their goal, and then they had a breakaway, hoof up the park, Gordon Dewry sprints forward, diagonal ball across to Loudrup. Loudrup squares it, McCoy's puts it in the back of net, they win 1-0.
That's right.
And I remember going away and saying the types of things that I'm hearing the media and Rangers fans talking about. I remember saying, oh, I said we're a better team when we hit the bar and they hit the post. And then people would just turn around to me and saying, but you didn't win.
No.
And that's all that matters. You didn't win. And then I was also reminded of a comment. Remember Danny Baker once talking about how football people don't get football fans. You know, when they say, oh, there was a bust up at the game and somebody, you know, a player got punched and isn't this terrible and it brings the game into disrepute. And football fans are sitting going, that was brilliant. He hooked him. But the other thing he said that they really don't get, the only thing better than beating your rivals with a last minute winner is finding out that the last minute winner was offside.
Did you see the tweet there from Eddie tonight?
What?
He says, oh, I'm always disappointed to know that it wasn't offside.
So just because it's even more funny to see them getting all worked up about it and that everybody's out to get them, despite the fact that, you know, they Goldson should have been booked or red carded. Morelos got a booking when there was at least four or five fouls that were yellow card offences. And Arfield got booked and, you know, could have been a red, you know, could have been booked a couple of times. They're a dirty team.
Do you know the other thing is quite good? The fact that McGregor had so little to do because he was going mental. He was shouting at them and bawling at them.
Oh, last 5 or 6 minutes, he was really going mental as they were passing the ball side to side to side to side.
Yeah, and he was
really going mental.
He had no impact on the game at all, apart from picking the ball at the net once. Because he never even saved that shot. Jack Mikey had it past the post.
Yeah. I think we have one shot on target? Was that the stats of the game?
The only one we had on target was the goal.
I see. I saw a stat after the game as well that the possession was 50-50.
Well, if you watch it again, hey Brian, Celtic actually did have some good play in the first half, but the final ball wasn't great. And as I say, if you watch it closely, the number of times that they're springing forward with great energy came from a bad pass. It wasn't necessarily, sometimes it was the high press. Sometimes it was just carelessness. Just poor passing. And they weren't necessarily under pressure when they made those poor passes. Celtic didn't play well. But it wasn't always forced errors.
No. So we've got a game. We've got a game midweek
against Cluj.
Against Cluj away.
How many things? Although I don't like everybody see like you see Celtic lose. I'd rather Cluj within the next round than Lazio. Because I'd rather play Cluj than play Lazio if we had to play later in the tournament. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I understand your point. I mean, I've now seen Cluj on the television, away to Cluj in the Champions League, and then in the flesh, I've seen Cluj twice at Celtic Park. And I know they beat us at Celtic Park, but as I've said many a time, at 2-1, only the aberration of
Scott Brown
handballing it. The next team to score was us at 2-1.
Celtic were all over them at that point.
Yep.
And the late goal, I mean, they were already out because they were weak.
It was ridiculous. So when we got them in the group, I actually thought, right, okay, we can beat them at home. We should get at least a draw away, possibly a win away. That was exactly what I thought.
Well, Celtic were comfortable when they drew one each with them. I mean, that's not the first time Celtic have come back with a 1-1 draw and thrown away Celtic Park. They did it against Maribor. Remember the Maribor?
Yeah.
They were drawing one each. And going into the last 10, 15 minutes, they were still in the next round. And they lost 1-0. So they've got form at that. But of course, this game doesn't matter, really. Other than you get money for winning, don't you?
You do. You get money for winning. But we've won the group, so even that's minimised. So what's your expectation? I mean, it's really difficult to pick what the team's going to be on Thursday because you've no idea which players Lennon's going to take, which ones he's not. Press conference today, all he said was, it's an excellent opportunity to give game time to players who've not had it. So what's your expectation on the team?
Well, I'm not, you know, you said it might be Craig Gordon. Well, Craig Gordon was a substitute yesterday.
Yeah.
So I don't imagine it'll be Bain, Scott Bain.
No. I was actually commenting, Scott Bain, last year's League Cup final was the goalkeeper. And yesterday he was third choice.
Aye. But I mean, that was an injury thing.
Yeah.
But I imagine he'll play Bauer at right back. And he'll play near Beaton. Probably Aha. And I think Bolingoli's fit again.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So he needs game time. So Bruni's not going. Callum McGregor will probably be captain. Will he take Christie? I don't know. Christie could do the rest as well. But he's got Rodgick and Cham. And who else has he got to play midfield?
I noticed Luca Connell. Was it Luca Connell? The guy signed from Bolton. I noticed he was in all the pictures yesterday as if he was in the squad but just wasn't stripped.
Yes.
He said that Griffiths is going.
Good, that's good. I was a wee bit disappointed Griffiths wasn't included in the bench, even for his morale reasons yesterday.
Well, I think he said in the press conference that with the players that he wanted on the bench, there just wasn't room for Griffiths.
Right.
Once Edward was playing. So Edward's not going. Frimpong's not
James
going.
James Forrest was poor yesterday. I think he was very poor.
Yeah.
Mikey Jones will be playing. Elianussi will be playing. Because they need games.
The only problem is they both play on the left.
Mikey Johnson could play on the right.
Okay, so
Mikey Johnson could play on the right. Look, Lewis Morgan could play on the wing. He can play on the right wing as well.
What's the score going to be?
I don't know. Because we don't know what team he's going to play.
No, exactly.
Clues have you something to play for.
Imagine having a European game. We are so utterly relaxed that you're not that bothered. It's brilliant, isn't it?
I mean, I know that, as I said to you, I'd rather Cluj was in the next round than Lazio, but I'd still want the Celtic to win.
I want Celtic to win every game. This is the famous thing. If the Celtic were playing tiddlywinks, I want them to win.
Exactly. Yeah. I agree with you. You never get tired of winning.
No. You know, see when people, when there was no Rangers, you know, when they'd gone bust and the new Rangers were starting in the bottom tier, and you would have people saying to you, but are you not bored?
No.
No?
No.
I actually think that's a question of a weirdo.
Yeah.
Who gets bored with winning?
Yeah.
What type of person gets bored with winning?
Yeah. It's curious, though, that since they came back into the league, Celtic have won everything.
Exactly. I mean, that's the thing. They talked about tainted titles when they didn't exist.
When they were in the league, other teams won cup.
Yeah. We're winning every single... I mean, it's quite incredible to actually think about the fact that we have won 10 domestic trophies in a row. It is...
If you consider it, I know the Scottish Cup is always the last game of the season.
Not this time, but yes.
In real terms, the league title is the last trophy.
Yeah.
Because you complete your programme. So if the league title is the last trophy, they've actually won 12 in a row, or 11 in a row. Because they won the league title the year before they started on this current run.
And they keep talking about the last time Celtic won, lost a cup game. But if you consider that we didn't lose, you know, the last time we lost a cup game in 90 minutes was even longer ago.
I know.
Anyway, we've no idea what we can predict for the midweek score. And we're happy with the result. Most important thing out of the next 10 days is to win against Hibs at Celtic Park.
Yes.
On the 15th of December. So
win all the league games till the end of the year.
Yeah. Four cup finals. I think there's four league games. That'd be right. Hibs, yep. Hearts, five. Hibs, Hearts, St Mirren, Aberdeen Rangers.
Uh-huh. I was a bit slightly intrigued though yesterday that when they went to Ibrox, they dominated them. You know?
They were heavily criticised because they played with no width at Ibrox, so our wingers and our fullbacks were able to progress with complete freedom. We are playing with our third choice left back. As we talked about earlier, Elianussi has been out for a month with injury, and then we had a couple of players at an off day, and the biggest miss was having no striker. I mean. Mm. Think about it. We beat them in a cup final with no striker for two-thirds of the game and 10 men for the other third of the game.
Yeah.
You put it that way, that is some achievement. Getting back to Jim Spence's bit, Celtic played two-thirds of the game without a striker and one-third of the game and the remaining third of the game with 10 men, and they were still better than Rangers.
That's what he said.
And with that, I will say, Lackeymore, thanks very much.
Thank you. Very enjoyable.
Bring me sunshine in your smile.
Oh my days, what a game that was. They couldn't get past Fraser Foster. Oh my days. Goodness me, oh my days. I will leave... hope you enjoyed the podcast with myself and Lackey Moore. We will have more along soon. Hope you enjoyed that. And I will leave the final word to Jeremy Frimpong. Oh, my days.
What was going through your head? You were obviously sitting in here. Fraser Forster saved the penalty and your team actually played excellently with 10 men. How were you feeling in here?
When Fraser saved it, a fan was shouting because my head turned and I was like, which side is this? So I turned around and then it was outside, so I was buzzing. But then I was like, the worst feeling ever. I'm like to the guy, oh my days, the minute's going so slow. I was like, oh, I wanted to cry, but yeah. And then when he blew the last whistle, I was buzzing.
So it was the hardest game of your life and perhaps one of the most valuable emotional lessons.
Oh my days.
To each brand new bright tomorrow, make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.